I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Warren Kinsella is a guy you don't always agree with, but you simply can't ignore him. Many have tried, but he's so ubiquitous and adept at political strategy to disregard him would be to one's detriment, and in some cases, political peril. He's written a new book. It's a strident, timely guide, Fight the Right, a manual for surviving the coming conservative apocalypse. More than just a manual, the book has fascinating anecdotes from his years in war rooms and as a political observer and pundit. He'll be appearing Monday, the 29th of October, 2012, as part of Capilano University's CAP Speakers Series, 7:30 p.m. at the NSCU Center on the North Shore, where, incidentally, Mr. Kinsella ran for the Federal Liberals in 1997 and lost. Warren Kinsella is a columnist and contributor to Sun Media and the Sun News Network. He's a lawyer, political consultant, and best-selling author. He's a part of the punk band Shit From Hell and is the founder and president of the Daisy Group, a political consulting group based in Toronto. His legendary website is at warrenkinsella.com. This book is published by Random House. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, Warren Kinsella. Mr. Kinsella, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Not a problem.
Thanks for reminding me. I lost in North Vancouver.
Well, you know, it's part of the resume, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it was, I will say, many years still after the fact, it was an honor and privilege to run. And I had a shot if they had run a good central campaign, and they didn't so much, so anyway.
Yeah. Now, did you like living out here?
I loved it. Yeah. Loved it. And it was, losing was a drag, and then losing my job immediately thereafter was even more of a drag. And that's how I ended up in the place I'd never lived in, and that I'd always kind of disliked from a distance, is Toronto, and here I am many years later, still here.
Now, the news of the day is Justin Trudeau and his entry into the Liberal leadership race. With him running, is it going to be much of a race, or will this be sort of, as was seen in the Liberal Party in the last decade or so, another coronation?
I think, I mean, unfortunately, at this point, it's shaping up to be a coronation. There was one guy who it was in Manitoba. I think he was a paramedic, you know, so not a super serious candidate, but he dropped out and is supporting Trudeau. So the unfortunate thing is that coronations are, not just for the Liberal Party, for any political party, are a bad idea. And the last time we experimented with one was 2003, when Mr. Martin won the leadership by flattening everybody else on the landscape. And that wasn't good for the party, and it's not good because you don't have that robust, energetic exchange of ideas. You get fewer members, you get less fundraising, you get less media attention. And the media attention is crucially important in this case, more than any other political party, because the Liberal Party has slipped from first place to second place to third place and has remained there. So we need media attention. We need, you know, the excitement that a contested leadership race gives. And unfortunately, so far, we don't have one.
Now, he's going to get a lot of media attention. I mean, he already has, just in the run-up for him announcing yesterday. Can he fight the right, though, to borrow the title of the book? Can he stem the conservative onslaught, I guess, or the juggernaut, whatever you want to call whatever?
I think he gets it, and the National Post just published a review just shortly before we started speaking, saying that it was rather nice of them that he borrowed the theme of my book, chapter and verse. And you know, the theme of Fight the Right, as you know, is that conservatives have stolen words away from, you know, progressives. They've gotten far better at communicating, and they've gotten even better at values, you know, that kind of ineffable stuff of life, aspiration and identity and all those things. And Justin, in his speech last night, according to the National Post, you know, mentioned values about 20 times. So I think he gets it. I think he's gotten the memo, and hopefully he sticks with it, because that, to me, is the way back. You know, we need to obviously get better at fundraising and membership and policy and all those things, but we need to get better at values and communication, and hopefully Justin gets that.
Will you be participating in this leadership contest?
I won't at this point. I'm like you. I'm a pundit, and so I write for the Sun Chain twice a week. I'm their house communist, and I'm on their network all the time. And I enjoy it. I enjoy fighting with conservatives, as you know. And I don't just preach it in my book. I practice it, and I don't want to give that up. I'm enjoying that too much. So, you know, for Justin or whoever wins the leadership to get me back, they're going to have to make me a really good offer.
Now, why hasn't the left, the sort of progressive parties, your party, the Liberal Party, heeded that which you suggest in this book?
Getting together, getting their act together?
Yeah.
Pride, vanity, myopia, you know, any number of reasons. The big one is, you know, whenever New Democrats talked about it, the Liberals were in the ascendancy and didn't want to hear anything about it. Now the New Democrats are in the ascendancy and don't want to talk about it, and Liberals do. So they need to meet up in the middle. And the Reform Party, the Progressive Conservative Party, and, you know, the elements that Stephen Harper stitched together in 2004, we need to follow his example. You know, he showed that if you bring together like-minded people in a, you know, single political option, you will win. You know, he won. As soon as he brought together the right, he won. And, you know, we can do that too, but like I say, we're going to shake off this myopia and selfishness and just this stubbornness that we can win in the current circumstances. This guy wins with less than 40% of the vote, a majority government. So that, to me, it's just simple math. That means that Liberals and New Democrats, who are sensible, need to examine that and learn from that and act on that. But so far, they're not doing it.
In the book, you talk about your time working for a favorite of yours, Jean Chrétien, and talking about how he, first of all, I found it fascinating talking about what it was like in 93 being in the war room there and the challenges that posed and the success, the subsequent success. I guess is that the model, do you think, pulling a Chrétien? Doing what he did and hopefully that translating to, say, the Liberal Party coming back again?
I think in 93 we were assisted by three things. We had a really, you know, great election machine in our war room. The war room I ran was just one small part of that. Mm-hmm. Second thing we had was the Red Book, right? Mm-hmm. Even if people didn't read it, it suggested to them that we had thought about the great issues of the day and we had a plan to deal with those things. So that was number two. But number three was Chrétien. You know, Chrétien, along with being a very adept politician, is an extremely likable guy. And that's why I like Justin's chances. Justin, I don't know if you've ever met him.
No.
He's a really likable guy. And anybody listening to this right now, I challenge you, go and meet this guy, and if you're a reasonable person, you're going to end up, even if you're a conservative or New Democrat, you're going to like him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Thomas Mulcair and Stephen Harper, with the greatest respect, and lawyers always say that when they're meant to be mean, are not nice guys. They're not likable. They're not people, you know, people, in the way that Jack Layton was or in the way that, you know, Brian Mulroney was. You know, Brian Mulroney could be a big phony, but he loved people, and
yeah,
people sense that in him. And the same thing, with, of course, with Jack Layton, who was, you know, a much-loved figure. These two guys, they're just these angry old guys. And that's why I like Justin's chances against them, because he just looks young and positive and fresh and new, and that's what I think the country wants to hear from now, and young people in particular.
The other thing, there's a great story in the book about, you obviously remember the photo of Kim Campbell standing behind her, holding up her QC robes. And, I mean, that was the image running into the 93 election, you know, that was a hard image to beat. And what was the story about the about Chrétien and the water skiing?
Well, what happened, it was, I was actually with a bunch of conservative friends at that point.
He was being called like yesterday's man.
Yeah, he was being called yesterday's man, and he's too old, and she's fresh and new,
yeah,
and vivacious and all that stuff. And it was driving me crazy, because I knew how physically active he was and how energetic he was, but, you know, the public didn't know that. That weekend, he didn't tell any of us who were working for him. He arranged for a Canadian press photographer to come to his place in near Shawinigan,
mm-hmm,
and take a picture of him water skiing. And afterwards, you know, I talked to him. I said, oh, my God, what if he'd fallen? And he said, well, it would have been all over. It was a of Robert Stanfield and the football or any number of other images. But it worked, and it put to rest in one photograph. There he was, you know, he's going through this arc of water and the sun shining through it, big smile on his face on one ski. It put to rest any notion that he was yesterday's man and the old guy. And, you know, he went on to clobber, as everybody knows, Kim Campbell.
And so imaging is important.
Symbols in politics are everything, right? We're going to see that in the presidential debates. You know, the problem that Mitt Romney has got is Mitt Romney. Yeah. And, you know, he just looks like a guy who's stepped off a yacht at some debutante's coming out party, you know, and he's eating canapes. And in this era, because to me, when I talk about Fight the Right, is the message for progressives of this era is the have and the have-nots, the 1% versus the 99%. And we have to align ourselves with the 99%. And Obama has brilliantly done that with his ads and everything else by saying, if there's ever been a more perfect embodiment of the 1%, you know, the rich, out-of-touch guys who caused the global recession, if there's ever been anybody who's more that than Mitt Romney, I don't know who it is. And so that's the problem is, you know, and as you know, you and I have talked about this before, when you watch a political ad or you watch a political debate, you should turn off the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Don't listen to their voices. Don't listen to the words. Just watch the body language and watch their interaction. And I think on that score, you know, the president is just going to clobber Romney.
And so about the images of, say, the two successful conservative politicians in this country, Stephen Harper and Rob Ford, say, in your town, I mean, they don't come across as likable people, yet they have had this success. So what accounts for the success?
Well, I think one thing I pointed out to, and I try and get to in the book, you know, some people are very cruel and they say things about Rob Ford's weight or, you know, about Stephen Harper's weight or so, whatever.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like, and I say to them, guys, I'm sorry, but, you know, the majority of Canadian men aren't male models. Majority of Canadian men look like Stephen Harper and Rob Ford, right? Not like Vancouver's mayor, you know. He does look like a male model. But, you know, these are guys who kind of look like average guys, and that's part of how they win. And in Fight the Right, I talk about conservatives have very skillfully, and in my opinion, cynically, aligned themselves with the little guy. When in fact, you know, they all tend to be rich guys and powerful guys, but they're very skillful at aligning themselves with the little guy and saying that they represent the little guy. And liberals like me and progressives have left that constituency alone. We've kind of moved away from that. And it's stupid. It's a mistake. Because the political brain is not a logical brain. It is an emotional brain. Logic only plays a supporting role, and the sooner we realize that is the sooner we're going to win again.
In the book, do you assign blame to people on the progressive side who say, dropped the ball?
I think there's a lot of fingerprints on the murder weapon, you know, in Canadian context. The Paul Martin guys, you know, moved away from strong central government, a strong federal government, and, you know, managerial competence. And then Dion and Ignatieff. Ignatieff, I think, the big problem is what I learned, you know, from being up close with him for a couple months is, you know, in his instincts, in his soul, he's a conservative. And I think a lot of people came to realize that. We need, you know, we need people who believe that government is a force for good. We need people who believe that empathy, you know, not just sympathy, but empathy for your fellow citizen is good. We need people who believe that working together, not just as individuals, but as a collective, is good. And that's how we build bridges and hospitals and schools and things. We got to get back to that. We got to get back to those values because those are our values. And if we do that, we will win.
And you don't think the NDP, because they're the number two party in this country, you don't think that they're the vehicle to fight the right, say?
The problem with the NDP at the federal level, the provincial level, you know, there's guys like Adrian Dix who are very smart and very capable.
Yeah.
But at the federal level, you know, Mulcair has played footsie and has now crawled into bed with separatism. And, you know, the Charlottetown Declaration, that's revealing my age, the Sherbrooke Declaration, the number of Bloc Québécois and Parti Québécois people he's got in his caucus, And just his, you know, his refusal, for example, to defend the Canadian flag flying in Quebec City, where he used to work. He's not a federalist, and his party is not federalist. And when there's a separatist government in power in Quebec City, that matters. Number two, he pits region against region. You know, this country doesn't work if we start playing, you know, what game, you know, favoring Quebec over Alberta or favoring Alberta over Quebec. That doesn't work. That's Stephen Harper's kind of approach in reverse. So that's why I thought Trudeau was smart last night to say, no more pitting region against region. We either hang together or we hang separately.
Now, the success of the right in the United States and to a certain extent in this country, though it hasn't been as rapid as it certainly has in the States in the 90s and in the first decade of this century, was that there was this sort of infrastructure of conservative thought, thinking, broadcasting. You had talk radio, you had cable, you had blogs. Is that something that the left say that they have to come up with a sort of infrastructure for progressive thought and discussion?
Well, the one thing that Obama benefits from that, you know, Trudeau, for example, will not, is he, you know, Obama's got a united party. The left in Canada, the progressives, are fractured into two parties. And as long as that happens, Harper's going to sail up the middle and win. So that's one crucial difference. Secondly, the Democrats have had the discipline of power. They have more elections. You know, they have elections on a regular basis at the Senate and the House and the presidential level. So they have more experience, and they have a lot more money. You know, the Democratic National Committee has been an ATM for, you know, Obama for quite some time, and he's benefited from that. So those are some crucial differences. But we can learn from him. And, you know, one of the things he's done, as I said, is embrace values and embrace clarity in language. And that's what I talk about in the book. And then I talk to a lot of his guys about what he did so we can draw, you know, lessons from that.
And the Internet, that'll play a big part in all of this, right?
For sure, but it's not everything. You know, no. The lesson we all saw from the Howard Dean campaign is Dean was created by the Internet and undone by the Internet. You know, he was the biggest fundraiser in Democratic Party history, and, you know, he was created by the Internet, some years ago, almost 10 years ago. And then, you know, he did the Dean Scream, and then he lost it all. You can't just do all Internet, and you can't do just all traditional, you know, door-knocking, you know, canvassing stuff. You got to do both, and that's what Obama did in 2008, and that's what he's doing now.
What are ways that those on your side, on the progressive side, that they can arm themselves, say, so that they'll be savvy against the right manipulating them or you know, hijacking issues or values, as you say in the book?
Learn from them, you know, and fight the right. On the first page, I say, look, you know, in the European Union, at the state level in the United States, federally, provincially, municipally in Canada, they're winning more than they ever have in the past. And when they're winning with, you know, bumblers like Rob Ford, we really need to take a hard look as to why that is taking place, right? It's not just luck. So what are they doing? And what they're doing is they're communicating better, so they've appropriated language, and they use simple, clear, and understandable language to talk to people, as opposed to progressives who are often, you know, giving a litany as opposed to, you know, saying what their priorities are. And then values. And they align themselves with the values and the hopes and aspirations of your average person. And liberals poo-poo that. You know, we make fun of it and we say, oh, well, you know, that's kind of down market. Or that's not particularly intellectual. Or even worse, we say, you know, that's stupid. And then, you know, that's when the conservatives have got us. And they say, ah, you know, they think we're stupid. They think you and I are stupid. We're not stupid, are we? We're smart. And voters are always going to agree with the politician who says that.
Did you enjoy writing this book?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I get that when I read it, and you know, you're recounting events, or you're talking to people, you know, that in the United States, for example, you talk about Frank Luntz or Carville or and the sort. It just seems like it comes across that you're really fascinated. You love politics, don't you?
No, I love it, but it's important. Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, the reason why I wrote it is my side is losing. You know, my side is not doing as well as it used to. My party, you know, my party that I love, that I grew up in. I defended my party growing up in Alberta. You know, I'm as hardcore as I get, an Alberta Liberal.
Yeah.
We're losing. And, you know, you can either stick your head in the sand about that, or you can examine why. And, well, because, you know, we're dividing the vote between the progressives, because we, you know, have gotten ineffective on language, because we've lost track of our values and the importance that voters attach to values. So, you know, those things are important. And I guess what I'm saying, I'm paying some tribute to conservatives in a way. I'm saying, let's learn from them.
Yeah.
Let's pay attention to how they do things and steal some of it.
It's always nice to talk, and I really enjoyed this book. Good luck with it.
Thanks so much.
WarrenKinsella.com is the website for more. The book is called Fight the Right, A Manual for Surviving the Coming Conservative Apocalypse. It's published by Random House. Its author, Warren Kinsella, on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.